Okay, this is an interview with Margot Bielby, interviewed, recorded on Tuesday, the 5th of May, at 1 p.m. So, Margot, if you just want to say a few things, I'll just check the microphone levels.
Right. My name is Margot Bielby. Actually, officially, my name is Margaret Bielby.
Right.
But my parents christened me Margaret and then called me Margot.
Fantastic. That's good to confuse people. Now, mine. Yeah, no, they look okay. I won't speak as much. So, Margot, thanks very much for giving up your time today to help with our history project.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, you're the first, and it's very appropriate given your long experience in the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if you could just start off talking a little bit about yourself, where you were born and when, and we'll take it from there.
Right. I was born in Broome in 1940. My father was a fleet manager of a pearling fleet. Then in 1942, my mother and I were evacuated because the Japs were coming. Mm. After the war, Dad joined the Air Force. And after the war, he bought a farm in Denmark. And we went down there. The farming was not a successful move. And when he was offered a job back in Broome in the pearling industry, he was on the first plane, I think, back there. So we went back to Broome and I grew up in Broome.
Mm.
And when it came to high school, in those days, the nearest high school was Geraldton. And so my parents had the choice of sending me to Geraldton High School and living in the hostel there, or going to a boarding school in Perth. And seeing I had relatives all over the place in Perth and none in Geraldton, they decided, so I went to PLC.
Right.
Except for one interesting year, when I was in year 11, my mother had done a year of exchange in New South Wales and got friendly with an English woman. And Mum decided, seeing that I was obviously boy mad, and was going to get married very young, I'd need to do travelling before I got married. So she arranged with Mrs. Nisbet for me to go to Scotland for my year 11 and go to school with her kids. So I spent a year going to the Greenock Academy, then came back and did year 12 at PLC. And then went to Teachers College, where I met my husband-to-be. And after 2 years at Teachers College, we got married. 2 years at Teachers College, 2 years teaching, and we got married. And, of course, in those wonderful long and far-off days, I had to resign.
Yes.
When we got married. I know I said to the blokes on my staff, what happens if I don't resign? They can't sack me for getting married. And they just looked at me and said, it's been tried, Margot. They will post you to Derby and Mark to Albany and then you'll resign.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a common experience. My mother had to resign her job as well when she got married in the 50s. So it's very sad for women like yourself who had a career to have to give that up. I was just wondering, given that you grew up in Broome and then spent a year in Scotland and a bit of time in Denmark, whether at that age the natural environment had any impact
on you? Oh, yes. Especially my childhood in Broome. Broome was a wonderful place to have a childhood. You know, we went swimming and down in the mangroves and collecting shells on the reefs. And my father and sister were mad fishing. I was never very interested in fishing. And then in Denmark I loved Denmark. My mother hated it. And I was just sort of interested, and Mike was too. I mean, every holidays when we were married, we would toss the kids into the van and tear off and either camp down in the southwest, or because he was madly interested in model planes, model boats, full-sized boats, most Christmas holidays, we'd drive across to the eastern states to go in national competitions for Mike. And so, yeah, we we travelled a lot. And in 1975, we had this absolutely fabulous year because Mike had long service leave. And at that time, he would either have 6 months on half pay or 12 months on full pay. Mm. No, sorry, 6 months on full pay or 12 months on half pay. And because I had been teaching at St Mary's, because they didn't have a thing about the fact that I was a temporary teacher, we decided we could afford 12 months on half pay. So we grabbed the kids who were 8 and 10 at the time and shot off to England, bought a motor caravan and spent a fabulous year driving around the UK and Europe. And everybody said, before we left, everybody said, oh, well, you're both teachers. You can teach them yourselves, can't you? Yeah, we said, maybe.
Yeah. So you said you had two sons?
Yes.
Yeah.
And one who survives.
Right.
Actually, the older son, the one who's now dead, actually both of them got us into forest protest.
Right.
Craig got arrested down in Giblet Block for standing in front of bulldozers, and Gary set up an email list, the NVDA email list for all the forest protesters and people interested. I remember one person commenting that, Wilson Tuckey, who I think was Minister for Forests at the time, he said, I think he's a covert Green because every time he opens his mouth, more people join the Greens.
Right. Your children, they were more involved in that forest issue at that time, or did they get their ideas from you and Mike, your husband?
Oh, a bit of both. Mm. I think Craig went down because there was a party down there and got involved and ended up camping in the forest as I said, standing in front of bulldozers when they were roading and that sort of thing. But, yes, I mean, you know, the whole family is interested in that sort of thing. So.
And going back to your mum and dad as you're growing up, were they involved in politics at all or had views about politics or did they talk to you about political issues?
Nope. I strongly suspect my mother voted Labor and my father voted Liberal, so politics was never discussed in our household. Because Mum came from a very, very working class family. Her brother worked on the wharves, and Dad came from a more. His father actually worked for C.Y. O'Connor.
Right.
As an engineer and a surveyor, so they never talked about politics, and I just sort of got interested, and Mike and I got interested, but not very much until we joined the Greens. I think we both probably voted Labor most elections until the Dems came along, and then we voted Democrat. And then Mike said, oh, they're starting this Green Party. Do you think we should join?
What year would that have been?
89.
So that would have been the WA Greens.
Yes.
Before they merged and formed the Greens WA.
Yeah, that's right.
And going through school, did you have any mentors or friends who were interested, especially in Broome, about the environment, about water quality?
Not really. Just, yes. No, it just sort of gradually grew. I mean, Mike was interested and I was interested and we just got more and more interested. Mm. Living in Collie was interesting because I was posted to Collie when I first started teaching Collie High School, and then Mike got transferred to Collie and they promptly posted me back to Perth. Mike was teaching at Wilson Park in Collie, and so after we were married we were down there, and of course that was 1960 when I started teaching there, and 62 after we got married, and that was all the time of the coal strike and closing down one of the mines, and the town being emptied because one mine was closed down, and most of the people who lived there worked in the mines.
Yes.
So that got us a bit interested in politics and in Collie, the environment.
Mm. Was your teaching at a primary level or a high school level?
It was a high school level. I was both Mike and I were sent to university by Teachers College. Mike failed two subjects. I passed all my subjects, but not well enough to be sent back to university again. Because if you were did an arts course, you had to get two B's and two C's to be sent back to university. And I got one B and three C's. But because I said that the next year is my special subject at Teachers College the next year, on advice from a friend, I said I wanted to do botany at university. And they were desperately short. She'd told me this. They were desperately short of biology teachers. So I got put into a secondary group and sent out to Collie High School as a teacher.
Teaching biology as well as other things?
Biology and science and physiology and hygiene. Right. Mike was put into a primary group at Teachers College and he decided he didn't like adolescents anyhow. He did a prac at Pinjarra High School where everything went wrong, and he came back saying, "No, primary for me."
Right. And so I suppose then being in Collie and you're an interest in biology and you're amongst the forest area down there, that helped your interest grow a little bit.
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, absolutely. Mm. I remember I had a little aquarium and there was what I assumed was a jilgi, that kids brought me fish and things, and there was a jilgi. And one boy went over to this little aquarium and said, "That's not a jilgi, that's a marin." And I said, "Oh, really? How do you know?" He said, "Because my father's the fisheries inspector." "Oh, right." And he said, "It's illegal to keep marin in an aquarium. Yeah. You can keep jilgis, you can't keep marin." And I said, "Oh, well, would you like to sort of take it and drop it back into the river for me and get me a jilgi?"
You talked before, Margot, about enjoying your travel with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And you also went for a year in Scotland to high school. Mm-hmm. Did you and Mike have an interest in travel after you graduated?
Yes. Yes. Well, actually, we had arranged to take a year without pay and go to England and both get jobs teaching. And then I found I was pregnant, so we didn't go. But as soon as we could afford to go, we went. We spent a year in 75, about 8 months in 86, and 6 months in 96. And the 96 year was fabulous because we swapped our house in Rolleystone for a canal boat.
Wow.
And spent 6 months touring around the English canals while the English couple lived in our house and had our cars, and they galloped up to Coral Bay and went here and went there. They had a wonderful year. We had a wonderful year.
Mm. You mentioned your teaching in Collie.
Mm-hmm.
When did you move to Rolleystone,
your house there? When I found I was pregnant, I said to my husband, "I am not going to wash nappies in Collie. Can we get a transfer?" So he said that Collie's winters were upsetting his asthma, and he applied for a transfer to Perth. Came up to Perth, and I taught at St Mary's Church of England's Girls' School for a while. And then he started after promotion, and he got promoted to Geraldton Primary School as a deputy headmaster. So we went up to Geraldton. We were there for some years. And then because the boys were getting to the stage of going to high school, and we thought we'd rather be in Perth. And anyhow, that Geraldton southerly got me down. Mm. And so Mike got a transfer to East Maddington Primary School, and we bought a block in Rolleystone and built our own passive solar house, which I designed, on the block, and that was in 1980-81. And I've been there ever since.
Mm. And you're right at the cutting edge at that date in terms of passive solar.
Mm.
and people having an interest in lowering energy use in the house.
Yes, well, I went down. My sister and I had an arrangement where our birthdays are a week apart, and she was in Victoria and I was in Western Australia. And for a while we started sending each other checks and realising that this was ridiculous. So we had this agreement that each birthday we would go and buy ourselves something that we wanted and then write to each other and say, you have just bought me. And I went down to Bowen's in Geraldton and found a book called The Wise House.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this looks interesting, and took it home and found out all about passive solar design, and we got very, very interested in that, to the extent that when Alana McTiernan was planning minister here, Mike gave her a hard time about planning decisions and passive solar.
Yeah, and that would have been about the time that people were looking at solar hot water heaters as well instead of electric or gas.
Yes, well, that was interesting too, because we looked into solar hot water. And at that time, it sort of didn't make sense. They were so expensive. And then Mike had some sailing buddies down at the Geraldton Building Company, and he was walking around the building company with a guy who was one of the top brass in the building company, and he saw a solar hot water system leaning against a wall, and he said, oh, you sell those, do you? And this guy said, no, we don't, not in Geraldton, because Geraldton water rips the guts out of hot water systems. So we've just stopped selling them. Mm. And Mike said, well, why have you got that one there? And he said, well, we don't know what to do with it. We can't send it back to the makers. And Mike said, well, how much do you want for it? And we bought it super cheap because we knew that we were coming down to Perth and we didn't have to worry about Geraldton water. And so we had a very early solar hot water system.
So building a house on a new block must have taken a lot of your time, and you were teaching at the same time?
We built the house as owner builders. We didn't build it. We subcontracted it. We built it over the Christmas holidays because Mike said he wanted to be in the house by the time school started. Mm. We came down, we did a house sit for a couple in Les Murdy who were going to the eastern states. We lived in their house in Les Murdy and looked after their cats while we were building the house. And we spent every day on site supervising and helping and doing things. And we managed to move into the house before school started.
Right. And your children must have found it fantastic living up in the hills like that.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. And therefore, in terms of your career, you continued as a teacher until retirement?
Well, no, actually, because of this business with the education department being difficult, I started a screen printing business at one stage when we were in Geraldton, and started off printing little satin thingamies for the yacht club, and then gradually built up and T-shirts and so on. And I ran that for a while, but at a bit of a loss, frankly. Mm. Although I did quite well with contacting sporting groups in country areas and doing T-shirts for them. I can remember I did a whole lot of T-shirts for the Pilbara Baseball Club or something and this sort of thing. And I'd said, you know, that I'd guarantee to get them the shirts in time and so on. But then I wasn't making much money at it, and I found out that I started doing an art course at Armidale Tech. And then I transferred to Forest Field Tech, and money problems started to come up because we invested in housing in 87, and we reckon we caused the stock market crash because we started buying shares and suddenly the bottom fell out of the market. Mm. So we started buying houses, and then interest rates went... We're paying 19.9 interest at one stage on three houses. And I said to Mike, well, I could always go back to teaching. And Mike said, well, we wouldn't employ you. Oh, thanks. And he said, well, you're only 2 year trained. Ah, terrific. He said, but they're very, very short of art teachers. He said, why don't you, you're doing this art course. By that stage, I was doing preliminary certificate in art and design. He said, why don't you try and talk them into taking you on as an art specialist? So I went into the education department and presented all the work that I'd been doing. And I was towards the end of what would have been a one-year course full-time. And I'd done it over several years. This woman in the education department said, well, when would you want to start teaching? And I said, well, I presume next year because I'm doing 4 subjects at Tech at the moment and I want to finish those to finish the course. Why? And she said, because there's a job coming up on Thursday.
Great timing.
And so I rang the headmaster and because there was somebody going on long service leave and they had nobody to replace her. And it was part-time, which is what I wanted. So I rang the headmaster and I said, when would you want me? And he said, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday and Friday. And I said, well, that works pretty well because the courses I'm doing at Tech are Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday morning.
Fantastic.
So I started as an art specialist at Cardinia. And then at the end of the year, next year I went to Langford and then to Guildford Primary School as an art specialist. Mm. And I stayed at Guildford until I retired in 95.
Wow, okay. That's fantastic in terms of opportunities at the right time.
Yes,
It's great. So you're living in the hills, Rolleystone, teaching at Guildford, and having these issues around under Paul Keating as treasurer, the recession we had to have and the high interest rates. What then inspired you to join the Greens? You said you joined the WA Greens in 89.
Well, because of the work we'd been doing on the forest protest. And we got interested in that. And there was this interesting bike ride that my son and his friend got involved in where the whole group of young people on bikes caught the Australind down to Bunbury, took a wood chip from the wood chip piles on the port there, and then rode their push bikes from Bunbury to Shannon Dam to throw the wood chip back into the forest. Very symbolic. And we decided we were not up to riding up the hill from Bunbury to Shannon Dam. Mm. But we went along in our camper van to keep an eye on the boys.
Yes.
And to be involved in the whole thing. So that was in 82, and that was a big moment. And we sort of got more and more involved in forest protest. So when the Greens, we found out there was this Green Party, we thought, yes, we'll join the Greens. And, of course, it was only supposed to be, just members and not doing anything. Joined the Greens and then I let it take over my life.
Yeah. With the forest movement, because a number of the members of the Greens around Australia have come from movements like the forest movement, that must have taken quite a bit of time as well because it was quite controversial in those days under Charlie Court as the Premier.
Mm.
Did it have any impact on your life in terms of your teaching, being involved with these sorts of groups?
No. If you're a teacher, you don't have anything to do with politics. Mm. The most I did was, when I was at Guildford, my timetable, because I was half-time, and I think I had to have 9-hour periods a week and there were only 8 classes. So I had to do something in the remaining time slot and I started a permaculture garden at the school and one of the teachers got very interested in that. The theory was that I took her class for an hour while she did some other job around the school, instead of which she did the job in her own spare time and she helped me with the permaculture garden and we grew a permaculture garden and she used it as part. I know at one stage I was putting a whole lot of stuff on the blackboard because when the kids start throwing stones at each other, I'd say, right, we're going back into the classroom and I'd start what they thought was the garden class and I thought was the actually science stuff. And I covered the blackboards with a whole lot of stuff, and I started to rub it off. And Alexei said, "Don't rub that off. I base my work for the next week on the stuff that you do in this class."
Wow.
And she based writing and art and everything on the work that we did in the garden class. So that was a lot of fun.
And I'd imagine your community around your house in Rolleystone would also be supportive of, you know, designing houses properly, permaculture, solar energy and so on.
Some of them?
No?
Some of them.
So you're a bit of ahead of the pack then in terms of those ideas. Mm, yeah. Mm. Did that create any conflict with the...
No. No. I get on very well with my neighbours and we don't discuss politics.
Yes. So you joined the WA Greens in 1989, just before the merger in January 1990. And
what merger? Oh, yes.
The merger of the four groups, WA Greens. Yeah. Yes. I'm just wondering whether over that time since then, have you been members of any other political party or has it just been the Greens?
No. There was at one time when I was secretary of the party and Carl Haynes was Carl Haynes and Stuart Jackson were co-conveners and Pat Gandini was treasurer. And one of the One Nation MLCs in Parliament said that all the office bearers in the Greens were ex-communists. Mm. And I was away when this was said and I came back and I said, "I object to that. I've never been a member of any political party until I joined the Greens." Mm. And Stuart said, "Well, it's good that you can say that because Carl and Pat Gandini had been communists."
Yes. Well, political parties are a bit more formal than, you know, forest and logging groups that you were involved with before. How did you find the formal processes of having meetings and elections and dealing with the constitution?
Well, I know I took the constitution with me once when we went out to the eastern states and I read it through, marking all the places where we were breaching the constitution. So I got involved in changing the constitution. And I really didn't have anything much to do with the party until virtually until I resigned. Although, because Rolleystone at that stage was in Pierce, and the Pierce Greens met in Mundaring, and we weren't going to drive through the hills at night with kangaroos and all, so we didn't go to any meetings, we didn't get involved very much in any way until I started teaching at Guildford Primary School. And I found out by that stage the Pierce Greens were meeting in Midland and Maida Vale. And so the night of meetings, I would stay at school and do work at school, grab a sandwich, go to the meeting and then drive home. And so I got involved... I think with the election when Christabel lost her Senate seat. And then someone at the debrief talked me into getting the Canning Greens going, so I started getting involved more. And then at that stage we had an email chat list and somebody from the Southwest said something on the chat list and I said, "That's against Greens policy, Dom." And he said, "The Greens don't have any policies." And I went, "What?" And I checked with Stuart Jackson. He said, "He's quite right. We haven't, because the Constitution then required that all policies had to be balloted to all members to be ratified." And they'd had a couple of goes at it and it failed. So I thought, well, we're going to have policies. So I gathered a group of like-minded people and we started having meetings and we decided that we would concentrate just on the four pillars and have a policy on social justice, on participatory democracy, peace and non-violence and ecological sustainability or whatever. And so I was put in charge of social justice. Carl Haynes took participatory democracy. The then secretary, Paul Smith, and a guy called Shane Guthrie took peace and non-violence. And the person who took ecological sustainability did nothing. So that didn't happen. But we got those the first three policies ratified. Then Rachel came on board later and she got the last one ratified. And then after that, we started, because somebody had got shrewd and said, right, if we have to have ballot policies, we'll have something we call platforms.
Mm.
And that was on, you know, everything under the sun. And so we continued as a policy working group by that stage, developing and working on and improving the platforms, which we ended up calling detailed policies and changing the constitution to fit.
Mm.
And I was policy convener for, I can't remember how long I continued as policy convener, and then I let it go and got on with something else because I was running for elections, co-convener with Carl, co-convener with Alison, secretary, and for a while national secretary. Mm. And I was still very involved with the policy working group. But it wasn't until last year that I put my hand up again to be policy co-convener.
You were a convener of the Bert Canning Regional Group around 96, 97. Was that the first time you took a formal position within the party?
Oh, probably. Mm. Mm. Mm.
And that's when you would have got some interest in developing, you know, policies, or was that later on?
Oh, no, my interest in policies came long before the Bert Canning Greens.
Right.
I mean, the Bert Canning Greens only developed when Bert became a federal seat.
Right.
And it looks like we're going to lose it.
Hmm.
Most irritating when I found that I am personally in Canning and not in Bert, because if I was in Bert, I'd have Matt Keogh as my federal member. Hmm. Instead of which, in Canning, I have Andrew Hastie.
The Liberal, yes. Yeah.
With
your involvement in the Canning Regional Group, it's interesting looking back on the original constitution from 1990 that was one of the important points for the Greens, that they have these regional groups that the members joined and discuss policies. But other things like the Reps Council, the Election Campaign Committee were all there in the beginning and still survive 30 years later.
Mm.
So many of those things, like consensus decision making, must have been important.
Oh, yes.
Probably a bit of hard work, but have ended up holding people together.
I know
in the
when
party.
I first started going to Pierce meetings and I found this consensus, and I thought, come on, it's never going to work. And I got converted, and I've realised now at Reps, for example, I can remember Reps going to a vote less than half a dozen times, and each time it was not a very successful process. I mean, sometimes, I must admit, sometimes it's consensus by exhaustion, but if you can get consensus, it's so much better than voting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems of the policy Lumio is that it's based on a voting thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's still consensus, still works fairly well.
Yeah.
And being convener, I'm not sure I was ever convener, was I?
Yes.
I've been permanent rep again and again.
Mm.
I remember at one stage, because I'd been 2 years as permanent rep and the constitution says you could only have a position for 2 years, so we talked Mike into being permanent rep, and at every reps meeting I'd say, well, Mike's an apology, he's not well, and I'm taking his place. And Mike be off flying model planes or something.
Right. Now, according to my records, you became party co-convener in 2000 for that first two-year period, 2000 to 2002, and then back again in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
What type of tasks were you involved with as co-convener?
Well, I became Carl Haynes talked me into being co-convener because we had a very tricky situation where a guy joined the Greens. We're not quite sure how he managed it. And then we found out that he was out on appeal for interfering with a minor. And He used to come to policy working group meetings, and he and his partner put their hand up to do the law and order policy, and I didn't know about this, and Giz found out that he was out on appeal, and she meetings were in her office, and she said, I don't want that man in my office. Mm-hmm. And we had all the problem, and his partner was co-convener with Paul Llewellyn. And Carl approached me and said, look, we've got to stop this. He said, I want to run as co-convener and I want you to run with me. Okay. So I was co-convener with Carl. And then with Miguel Castillo. And then later I was co-convener with Alison. I think Alison talked me into it. And then Dee O'Neill. And somewhere along the line, I'm not quite sure where, I was secretary. I know I was secretary when we joined the Australian Greens because I took the common seal across to the conference in Canberra when we finally, after I think it was the third time we'd had a go at joining the Australian Greens, and each time had been knocked back by ballot in Western Australia, but it was just squeaked through this time. Got there and found out that there was problems about Ansett or something. I know I arrived on the Saturday morning of the conference, and Carl picked me up, I think. Stuart picked me up, I can't remember, and told me that there was a bit of a difficulty because Drew Hutton from Queensland was going to blackball the West Australian Greens because he didn't want us to join the Greens.
Right. That whole process of bringing the Green groups together across Australia just seems so fraught because, as you said, there was an earlier time around 92 where there was a process of trying to bring everyone together and WA Greens didn't join at that stage. Were you involved in the discussions later on about bringing the Greens from WA into the National Greens?
Yes. Yeah. I was on the working group that was working to join it, and my husband wrote the no case.
Oh, gosh.
Because I found out that Miguel Castillo was going to write the no case because he was totally opposed to joining the Australian Greens. And I said to Mike, look, Miguel's English is very much his second language and he doesn't understand computers. How about you giving him a hand? And Mike said, oh, yeah, okay, you know, I'll help you. He said, because I'm not very impressed with the Australian Greens anyhow. And then Miguel had a car accident. Well, he was run over in Newcastle Street.
Wow.
He was crossing the road and the car backed into him and he was in hospital. And so Mike ended up writing the no case with me sending him, giving him information. So Mike wrote the no case and then voted yes.
So people like Miguel, was there opposition to joining the other Green parties in Australia based on that would make things too formal, or they didn't like how other political parties worked nationally?
I don't know, just West Australians being West Australian, I think.
Okay.
a lot of it. Yeah. As I said, I think there was three ballots on joining the Australian Greens and the first two failed. And then finally, we just squeaked in. And as I said, Drew Hutton was going to... Having gone to all that, and the main move to join at that stage was that Bob was threatening to come over here and form an Australian Greens party in Western Australia.
Right.
So there would have been the Greens WA and the Australian Greens in Western Australia, and that would have been a disaster
for everybody. Incredibly confusing for the public.
Oh,
yes. Yes,
yes. Apparently Bob and Giz... took Drew into a corner and convinced him that he was not to attempt to blackball us. And we joined the Australian Greens, which caused quite a lot of confusion because before that time we had policies. I mean, we had effectively national policies. Mm. We had policies on tax, we had policies on population, we had policies on superannuation. And after we joined the Australian Greens, we realised, well, actually, those are national issues.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let the Australian Greens deal with that and we'll concentrate on things that are WA issues.
Yeah, and would have been more important during a state election.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah. So you became party secretary, according to my notes, in 2003 and 2004. Is that a day-to-day job or is it, once again, a job you do voluntarily as well as...
What was that? Party secretary?
Party secretary.
For GWA?
In Greens WA, yes.
Yeah, because I know... by that stage, Mike and I were volunteering a day a week in the office. And so I did a lot of the secretary work and I actually sort of effectively became membership officer at that time too. It was... I mean, people say, you know, you do all this stuff for nothing. You don't get paid. Do you get petrol?
No.
I just do it.
Because you love to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you also became policy working group co-convener, slightly earlier than that.
About 2000,
yeah,
99 or 2000.
99 through to 2010, once again, a very long period to be involved with all those meetings and getting policies together and revising them, I suppose, every election,
yep.
would it be? Yeah. Making sure they're up to date and going through meetings based on consensus.
Mm-hmm.
But you kept very positive about that approach and involving people.
Oh, yeah, 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 yes. Mind you, I must admit, until this year... mainly, I tried to get people interested in looking at the policies and doing something about revising them. And people would go, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. And then suddenly their party would sort of go, oh, it's November and we've got an election in March. We've got to revise the policies. And they tended to say, send the whole lot out to groups and say, approve the lot or else sort of business. And some of them weren't looked at very closely. The one that's a complete mess is heritage. You should have a look at the heritage policy. It's a mess. I don't know who drafted that, but obviously it just sort of people went, heritage, well, that's not terribly important. Tick. Yeah.
How many members are on the policy working group to help you go through this process?
I think it's 141.
Wow.
But not all of them engage.
Right, right.
Because I know my son is on the policy working group and I say to him every now and then, do you get any of the notifications I sent out? And he said, I think my computer puts them into a file that I never look at.
Junk folder.
Yes.
Oh, that's very sad. Are you still personally particularly focused on the environmental policies, or now that you've had all this experience across the broad range... You feel comfortable?
Well, actually, the funny thing is I got, first of all, interested. As I said, I took on the core policy of social justice. And I used to get irritated when people say, oh, well, yes, but you're an environment party, aren't you? And I said, if you have a look at our policies, you'll find there's only about half a dozen environment policies and most of them are social justice policies. And, of course, I'm, you know, interested in education and...
Yeah, and along the way, you know, state governments have made changes, especially in the environment area with Jeff Gallop and the changes to the logging of old-growth forests. So you do need to move on and update them and recognising those changes have happened.
Yeah. Yeah, well, every now and then, at the moment, you know, I'd say the present measures are such and such and somebody says... But that's out of date. That bill's been passed. Oh, right, let's change that.
When you're involved in that way with the policy working group and secretary and convener, would you be working 5 days a week on Greens issues? Or were you,
just yes? About, yes.
And Mike as well, or he had...
Oh, no, no.
Right.
Mike, as I said, Mike worked 1 day a week in the Greens office and then in Alison's office. But apart from that, Mike spent his time making things and doing things and flying planes and sailing model boats. And Mike has been in... at 17, he sailed in a national yachting championships in Sydney as a forward hand. He sailed in model yacht nationals. He sailed in a model yacht international in Fleetwood in 86 it must have been. That's model yachts, and then model planes. He's flown nationally and internationally. Mm. So, yes, doing things with his hands. I know when he retired, I went down to his school, and one of the women sidled up to me and said, "What's it like having Mike home all day?" And I said, "Well, actually not very different." I said, "He gets up in the morning and has breakfast and goes out to the shed. Comes in, makes himself lunch and goes out to the shed. Yeah. Comes in and has tea and half the time goes out to the shed." I said, "I don't see any more of him now that he's retired than I did when he was working."
And were you able to keep up your interest in art?
Yeah.
As you're doing your Greens activities as well?
Yeah. Less in art now. I went through a phase of quilt making. And actually did quite well. If you go out to Tim's office and ask for it, there's a wall hanging that I made for Scott Ludlam's office when he was a senator, based on a poster that Scott did for the Greens. And I made a really big wall hanging for that. And then when Scott had to step down, I said, "What's going to happen to my wall hanging?" And Tim ended up with it.
We'll have to get a photo of it for our history website. Mm. Sounds fantastic. Because then you move on as well, and not only doing sort of the party work as such, but becoming a candidate for elections. And that must have also taken an enormous amount of time. You know, your first one was in 1998, a federal election for the seat of Canning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a massive amount of work.
Yes, and almost completely on my own. Mike didn't even help me on that one. And I didn't do much campaigning. I mean, for heaven's sake, Canning. I tried to get the things and do things. Mm. The main job I did with elections was organising people to do booths on election day.
To hand out how to votes.
Mm. Mm.
Mm. But you did also the lower house in Rolleystone, Darling Range. You must be a bit of an old hand now knowing what to do in terms of planning an election campaign for people coming through in the Greens.
Mm. Mm. Yes, well, then I've helped other people. I mean, my son's ex-girlfriend, who now lives in Rolleystone, was a candidate for Canning at one election, and I helped Denise with her campaign. The only time when I haven't been involved in election campaigns was when Mike got so sick.
Yes. With the campaigns, did you have to do media, and how did you feel about being interviewed and making comments and statements?
That was okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had media training.
Right.
We had various people. I know at one stage somebody came along for media training and said, "You know, you've got to look professional. You know, you can't have green hair." And I turned to Eleanor Jeffries, who was our candidate for Perth at that election, I think, and I said, "Keep the green hair, Eleanor."
Because Mike also was a candidate in the Southern River, 2005. How did he go?
That wasn't his idea.
Right.
'Cause I was supposed to be the candidate for Southern River, and there was this super wonderful female in Kalamunda who was going to be our candidate for Darling Range. And when we were signing up the papers to go into the WAEC, she said, "Do I have to be an Australian citizen?" And we all went, "Oh, yes." Oh, she said, "Well, I'm not." And I can remember Paul Davis said, "Margot, will you be the candidate for Darling Range?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, but who's going to be the candidate for Southern River?" And we all looked at each other, and I rang Mike up from the meeting and said, "Guess who's the candidate for Southern River?" I don't think he visited his electorate until polling day.
Yeah. But alongside all of that, you've also been booth coordinator
for
many of the elections. Mm. That, once again, takes a lot of organising, arranging people to...
I think twice I was the booth coordinator for the whole of East Metro.
Right.
Where I didn't do all the work. I appointed people to be, you know, Bass and Dean booth coordinator and Morley booth coordinator, and checked up on them to see how they were going and when some of them weren't, and, you know, all sorts of things like that. But, yes, it was. That's a huge amount of work.
Mm.
And they'd last the by-election for Darling Range. I got so little help from the party. I said, right, that's it. I'm not doing that anymore. Because, yes.
How are we going this election? You've got over Darling Range by-election. Do you think you might also put your hand up? Helping out at, you know, the state election in terms of managing booths or volunteers.
I'll do a booth.
Yeah.
I've got to the stage. Somebody else can do all that work. Anyhow, I'm going to be still busy right up to the election probably on policy.
Policies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the last election I organised the two booths in Rolly Stone, the Rolly Stone Hall and the Rolly Stone High School.
Mm.
And I worked at the high school booth.
Yeah. The party at the moment seems to have quite good processes for training people in terms of that, and also calling around to volunteers on a regular basis. And have you seen many changes since 1990 in the way it processes things like that for elections? Because obviously as a political party, the idea is to try and win seats.
I think we're improving all the time. A tremendous amount of, and of course, the number of members has increased in that time. I can remember when we had 350 members. Now we've got well over 1,000. Well, it goes up and down a bit, but.
Yeah. And how many people are in your regional group now? Is it?
I think it's about 45.
Right.
And, of course, because of the nature of Canning, Bert's okay, but Canning is a mess. And, I mean, people in Mandurah are not going to drive up to Armidale for meetings, and people in Armidale are not going to drive down to Mandurah.
No.
So we effectively don't have face-to-face meetings.
No. We have massive seats federally in WA, and Canning's one of them in terms of distances.
Well, in fact, at a couple of elections... Canning has been treated as a regional seat, although quite a bit of it is in the metro area.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a mess.
Mm.
Bert Canning actually does all its work on the Bert Canning Lumio. We put up all the proposals to Reps Council on the Lumio and vote on them. And I must admit, sometimes I go along to reps meetings and say, Bert Canning has no position at all on this proposal. They're just not interested.
How do you see the arrangements now between the party as it is today and those movements? You're talking early in the 1980s about the forest movements and the anti-nuclear movements. How is it today, do you think, in terms of the party's connections and connections with members of those groups who might then want to join a political party?
Oh, I think there's very good connections by people like GIZ and the MLCs staying in contact with all these groups. I know Alison, you know, in contact with whole lots of disability groups LGBTI groups and various other groups that she keeps in contact with and brings their views into the party.
What do you think's been the biggest challenge recently for the party in terms of its growth in members and the number of elections? You know, you've got two senators at the moment. Might be a federal election campaign in the next year or so.
Yes, yeah. Next year, I think. One of the biggest problems, although our membership numbers have increased, the engagement of members with the party hasn't increased at the same pace. I get very irritated when we don't ask very much of our members. the one thing that we do ask of members is that they do a polling booth on election day. Mm. And it is amazing how many members won't.
Mm.
And, of course, nowadays with work, often because they're working on a Saturday. Mm. They can't.
Mm. Is that different to previous, like in the 1990s, were people more willing yes. to get involved?
Mm. Yeah. Although we had a lot less members, we managed to staff most of our polling booths, mm. although I must admit in Canning, nearly every election I had to go to the Labor Party and say, look, we can't get anybody to staff. North Dandalup is one of our ones. I don't think we've ever had anybody to staff North Dandalup. Yeah. And the Labor Party say, well, as you're preferencing us, we'll get... I remember one election I went down to Serpentine and I knew that we didn't have anybody there, but I went down to check up. And I saw a guy in a green T-shirt and I thought, that's odd, I didn't think we had anybody here. So I trotted over to this guy and I said, are you handing out for the Greens? And he said, yes, that's right. I said, you a member? And he said, no, I'm a member of the Labor Party. He said, but they gave me the job of handing out for the Greens at Serpentine. So he said, I went through my drawer and found I had a green T-shirt, so I put that on.
What a fantastic story. What a fantastic story. Where do you think the main challenges now are in the future for the Greens, WA? And where do you think it will be in, say, 10 years' time in terms of membership size or seats?
I don't know. One thing is, although we are more aligned with the Labor Party than the Liberals, the Labor Party does not love us.
Mm.
And they... would get rid of us if they could, and they're very well aware that that a lot of their members leave the Labor Party and join the Greens.
Mm.
And so, you know, they're really not impressed with us, especially when we start taking the seat of Melbourne, for example, away from them and the possibility of losing some of the inner city seats from Labor to the Greens. So although, you know, we're in theory good mates... We're not. I mean, I got an email from Albo before one election saying, I don't know how he got my email address, but anyhow saying, don't you think it's disgusting that the Greens are preferencing Liberal in some seat in New South Wales?
Yeah.
And when I saw that the email had actually come from Albanese himself and not just from his office, I wrote back and said, that is absolute bunkum. As far as I know, the Greens have never, ever preferenced the Liberal Party in any electorate, and it doesn't work like that. Mm. It's not a top-down decision. Each regional group decides who they're going to preference. I said, we have, on occasions, gone open ticket, where we said, you know, if you want a Labor government, vote this way, and if you want a Liberal government, vote that way. But, you know, I said the Greens do not preference. I'm seeing it's coming up on Twitter at the moment
mm.
that the Greens are preferencing a Liberal candidate in one seat in Queensland.
Mm.
And I don't know whether it's true or not.
Mm.
But, as I said, the Labor Party, what the funniest was when the Greens office was in the building in Hay Street, where there was the union was up the top in that building, and people would come into the Greens office and hide so right. that union members couldn't see that they were there, and they'd come in to join the Greens and say, don't tell anybody we're here.
My gosh. I know that both you and Mike have been made life members mm-hmm. of the Greens WA. Which is a small recognition of all those years of meetings and booths and working hard as a volunteer. What's it meant personally to you to be a member and have contributed to the Greens WA Party?
Oh, well, a huge amount of satisfaction in the work that I've done for the Greens. I think Mike got a lot of satisfaction, even though he didn't do as much, but he really appreciated the time that he... spent in the Greens with the result that Alison got up in Parliament on the VAD debate and said, you know, all of these people, because I'd sent emails to all the members who might vote in favour of the VAD legislation, and a couple of them read out my emails in Parliament. And Alison got irritated because she thought, these people don't even know Mike. She said, I knew Mike. I knew him well. He worked in my office. Mm. He was a curmudgeonly old bugger.
The voluntary assisted dying campaign, that's something you and Mike put a lot of effort into as well.
Mike didn't.
Mike didn't? No.
No.
But you did with Dying with Dignity Committee, being involved with that on the committee? Yes.
It was after Mike died that I got involved.
Right, okay. But after he died?
Mm. I mean, I'd always been in favour of it.
Yeah.
And talked to Robin about it. Mm. But until after Mike died, that really started to mean something for me. And I got on the committee of Dying with Dignity and worked particularly last year.
Yes.
And one interesting thing. Liam Carter, who's a member of the Greens and worked for Robin, and he contacted me and said, look, I'm doing a media course at university and we have to make a film on a story that matters. Mm. And I think your story with Mike is the story that matters. Mm. He said, would you be happy to have us make a movie of Mike's story? And I said, oh, yes, that'd be great. I tell you what, I never want to be an actress. This group of young uni students came out and they'd spend all day, they did bring food, and they'd say, now, Margot, just walk down that path. Now do it again. Now do it again. And they finally ended up with this movie, His Choice. And when the movies were judged, my son and I went to the presentation, and that little movie, His Choice, got best documentary, best production, best something else, and the overall prize.
Fantastic. Mm. That's fantastic. Because obviously it was such an emotional campaign, and the parliamentary process of having committee hearings and submissions. And I think we're one of the few states in Australia to now have legislation. I think Victoria has similar legislation.
Yes.
So it's a big achievement to have that go through Parliament.
Yes.
And have it legislated. How much time did you put into that campaign?
Last year? Oh, a heck of a lot of time.
You? Yeah.
I sort of let the Greens slide for a while last year and worked on the VAD campaign. Mm. With Robin, and the funniest time was I was at the dentist and my phone rang and I pulled it out and had a look. I don't know who this is, so I turned it off. And then it rang again and I went, I still don't know who this is. And finally, when I got out of the dentist chair and got everything out of my mouth, I thought, I don't know who this was, but I better ring them back. Mm. So I rang back and this person said, look, this is so-and-so from Roger Cook's office. I know this is awfully short notice, but could you come up to Parliament House at midday tomorrow because Roger and Malcolm McCusker are having a presser out in front of Parliament and we want you there to tell your story. Mm. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay. I'll drive all the way in from Rowley Stone and I'll get 2 seconds on one channel if I'm lucky. So I went in and they ran through and advised me. And they said, bring along a wedding photo.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I went along and so Roger got up and talked about the bill and what was going to be done and this and that and the other. And then Malcolm McCusker stepped up and said all this stuff. And then Roger said, Margot, will you come and tell your husband's story? So I stepped up and all these journalists converged on me. Mm. And start asking. One of the questions that really got me down was, are you related to anybody in the Labor government?
Yeah.
I said, not as far as I know. I probably am because I've got relatives all over this state. Mm. And Roger said, I'd be proud to be related to Margot. And I ended up sitting on the steps of Parliament with my wedding photo between my knees with Roger sitting beside me and all these journalists asking questions. Mm. And I thought, well, I wonder if any of that will get on the news. Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 10 and the ABC. And it was all me. They practically ignored Roger and Malcolm McCusker. Mm. The next time I ran into Malcolm McCusker, I said, I'm sorry that they ignored you. And he said, oh, well, I was rather relieved.
Yeah. It must have been a bit hard for Robin Chappell as well in terms of the effort he'd put into that issue.
Oh, yes.
As a Greens MP in the upper house. But I suppose he was just very proud that in the end it did get through.
Yes.
And that legislation is now there to be used probably early next year, is it, when it comes into effect?
Yeah, 18 months from when the bill was passed, so before they do it. And Dying with Dignity is making sure that they're keeping an eye on the whole implementation process to make sure that it doesn't run off the rails.
Mm.
And, of course, the only thing we're worried about is the fact that Nick Gorin has threatened that if the Liberals get in at the next election, they'll try to weaken it or overrule it.
Right.
I just hope they say that before the election because they'll lose a lot of votes if they say that.
There's a lot of public who support that, having seen family members like you have go through that that part of your life.
Well,
and it's not very easy.
Surveys have showed that 88% of West Australians support the bill. So, you know, if they say... you know, we're going to overturn this bill if we get in, it won't do them any help at all.
Would you say that is one of your proudest achievements?
Oh, yes.
Being a Greens member? Mm. Yes.
Well, it wasn't to do with being a Greens member, really, although it started from... No, it started from my views that this is my right. Mm. I mean, I know when Mike, in 2013, after Mike's third visit to hospital, when... they couldn't do anything for him. And Mike said, I think I'll take your mother's way out because my mother had starved herself to death.
Yes, terrible.
And that was her own, you know, her only option. And I said, well, I think we can do better than that. And he joined Exit International and found out how to import Nebutal and was able to, instead of the terrible deaths I've heard some people have, he drank the stuff down and went to sleep.
Far more peaceful, yes, yeah. Well, thank you, Margot. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to add to the interview? Given 30 years, a lot to cover in just over an hour, but it's been a fabulous career that you've had with the Greens and a lot of achievements along the way, not just the VAD bill. And we're coming up to a state election where hopefully that can continue as well.
Yes, and I hope we... the state election, I hope we get South Metro back again and hope we get mining and pastoral, but that's a bit of an outside chance. Yeah. Mining and pastoral's always been an outside chance for us. Maintain North Metro, East Metro and South West. Although the South West is a mess.
Yes. Well, thank you. We will have that to look forward to in March next year. Hopefully we'll get some good results. Thanks very much for your time this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Margot.
Right. Bye.